If you're interested in buying a gun today, there's probably no better place in the United States to get any kind of gun or as many guns as you want than the state of Missouri. Missouri has done its best to eliminate virtually all forms of gun control, gun restrictions in their state. In fact, their legislature a while ago passed a law declaring the state of Missouri to be a Second Amendment sanctuary state, meaning that no federal gun control law applies to the state of Missouri, because the state of Missouri has declared that the Second Amendment rules. It takes precedence, and therefore the state of Missouri doesn't recognize federal restrictions, because a restriction from the federal government means that the federal government to the state of Missouri is violating the United States Constitution. And so it is one of the easiest states to get all the guns that your heart desires. It's also one of the top states per capita for the number of gun deaths in America. So it's not only a great state to go and buy as many guns as you'd like to buy, it's a great state to die from a gun firing a bullet or bullets into your body. It's amazing, this past Wednesday in Kansas City, Missouri, with many rounds being fired from the guns of at least two individuals we know of, that actually only one person died. It's quite surprising. There were at least 22 people wounded by this gunfire. 11 of them, half of them, children between the ages of 6 and 16. And then I think there were another 7 people that ended up in the hospital, because probably from injuries in the stampede to find a place to hide. Almost 1 million people gathered to watch the Kansas City Chiefs in a parade celebrating their Super Bowl victory. One more day in America. At some point, we all are going to say enough, because we're going to want to live our lives in a normal way. We're going to not want to have to say to each other, well, we can't gather in large crowds anymore because anybody could get shot. I mean, here it is. We're a month and a half into the new year, and we've already had 48 mass shootings in America as of last Wednesday, when the Super Bowl parade took place. We've had a number of mass shootings since Wednesday. There's at least one or two a day taking place in this country. There is a way to reduce this. I don't know if it could ever be completely stopped, but there is a way, there are ways actually, to significantly reduce gun violence in America, if we, the people, decided that's what we wanted. And the majority of us are not gun nuts. I've said this many times, we are not a nation of gun nuts. 72% of us do not own a gun. That's a very high number. of people who don't want a gun in the house. And yet, we have a level of gun violence and gun deaths that supersedes just about every other place on the planet. It's something that we're smart enough to be able to fix, if that's what we would want to do. Do we? Do we? I'm Michael Moore. This is my podcast, Rumble with Michael Moore. I've got a couple of things I'd like to talk to you about today. So stick with me here after I give my thanks and appreciation to the good people at Netflix who are underwriting today's episode. Netflix is in for another great night at the Oscars next month, as has been the case now for the past many years. I think they've got about 10 movies that have various nominations at the Oscars this year. Just an incredible array of films. And at the top of that list is Bradley Cooper's masterwork, Maestro. Maestro has 7 Oscar nominations, including Best Picture of the Year, Best Actor for Bradley Cooper, Best Actress for Carey Mulligan, Best Hair and Makeup, Best Sound. And I'll tell you, having seen it, it is a work of art. The movie, if you don't know, is about the great conductor and composer Leonard Bernstein, who, when I was growing up, was maybe the most famous person, and certainly in classical music, in America. He not only composed music, but he also did musicals, plays. West Side Story, that's Leonard Bernstein. But this film, Maestro, unlike a traditional biopic, tells his story through the love story of his wife, Felicia and Leonard. And Bradley Cooper and Carey Mulligan are a tour de force, both of them also nominated this year for Screen Actor Guild Awards for their performance. They just completely transform themselves in this film. The other great thing about this movie, and I'm just saying this because you've heard me talk about this and when I talk about movies, is the sound. It never gets discussion. I know they're called motion pictures. It's not called motion sound. But I have always, whenever I've gone to speak at film schools or talk to my crew, I tell them the sound is, if not as important as picture, it's more important. Sound carries the story. And especially in a film about a composer, sound couldn't be more important. I mean, it's just an amazing job that they did. And of course, they should be nominated for the Oscars for this. I just want to encourage everybody here listening to me to go and see Maestro if it's still in the theater in your town. But for sure, you can catch it on Netflix and you will not be disappointed. And thank you, Netflix, for supporting this podcast and for supporting my voice and really the voices of so many independent filmmakers that I know that have had their films made thanks to Netflix.
Well, it's been one of those crazy weeks in America. Of course, now at this point, we could say at the end of every week, it's been one of those crazy weeks because it just seems to pile on and pile on and pile on with all sorts of things that are going on right now. And as we now are in this election year, it's getting even crazier. It was amazing on last Friday when the judge in New York did something that had really never happened to any American before it happened this past Friday to Donald J. Trump. Because he had already been found guilty of committing so much fraud, lying to the government, lying to the banks to get money over the years. The judge in this case had already found Trump guilty a few months ago of this massive fraud. On Friday, he issued his decision on what the fine would be. And he fined Donald Trump $355 million. But before you lock down on that number, and this is the number that most of the media has been reporting, I want to get this very clear. And I'd like to ask the media to please report the exact and proper number. It's not $355 million. It's quite a bit more. Let me break it down for you. So there's the $355 million fine to Trump. The judge also fined his two adult sons and his chief financial officer. They each got a fine with interest totaling approximately another $10 million. So the base number is actually $365 million, but it doesn't stop there because the judge said that Trump also had to pay interest from when the fraud, and I should say the frauds, began, which we're talking about years and years ago. Compounded interest that will turn out to be approximately another $100 million. So it, with the fine and the interest, we're now at about $465 million. But it doesn't really stop there, does it? Because it isn't just this fraud case. Just a month or so ago, he was found guilty of defaming the woman that in a previous trial, the jury declared that he sexually assaulted, essentially raped, a woman by the name of E. Jean Carroll. So in that first trial, he was ordered to pay over $5 million for the sexual assault to her. But within minutes after a court and a jury had decided he in fact did commit this violent crime against her, he publicly started berating her and defaming her and lying about her again. So she immediately filed another suit for this new defamation. And last month, a jury came back and said, yeah, that's correct. He did do that. And it looks like he's not going to stop. So how do we stop him? Well, let's fine him again. This time, not for $5 million. Let's add on another $83, $84 million. So roughly now what he owes E. Jean Carroll is another $90 million plus. And of course, the interest accrues on that day after day. So just let's tack on another $100 million to the $465 million from this past week in fines and interest. And we are now at close to $560 million that he owes. Oh, but wait, why stop there? Because he also is going to owe the IRS. You remember that back when he first ran, Hillary kept pounding away on him about, why don't you release your tax returns? And his answer to that was, because I'm smart. I get away without paying a lot of tax because I'm smart, because I defraud the United States government. I defraud the American people. American people have to pay their taxes, but not I, not Donald Trump. Well, word has come down now that the IRS has finally finished their audit. I should say audits, because they've had to audit everything, every one of his businesses, him, the whole deal, and for decades. This is a decades-long scam to defraud the IRS. One analyst has put that number. That number could possibly also be as high as $100 million in back taxes that he hasn't paid, in fines for not paying those back taxes, and then interest accrued on the back taxes and the fine for not having paid it. So that could possibly be upwards. We don't know yet, but they say that we should know this sometime soon, finally. Another $100 million? Now we're at $650 million, potentially. We don't know the exact IRS number yet, but it's coming. But that's not it. On March 25th, he's going on trial for the committing the felony of essentially rigging his first election in 2016 by keeping the truth from the American people that he paid hush money to a porn star so that she would not publicly tell the American people about the affair that they had. So the American people would then go to the polls, not having all the information they needed, not like they needed a whole lot more about this guy, but they would not have this piece of it as they decided if they should vote for him or not. That's a fraud. He'll go on trial for that. And if found guilty, will pay another large fine. We would don't even know what that could be. It could be just a few million. It could be a lot of millions. Now, we're already, remember, at him owing the state of New York, E. Jean Carroll, the IRS, fines and accrued interest of $650 million. And if found guilty, in the hush money case, I don't really even want to put a number on that, but you get where this is going, right? If we're already at $650 million, we're heading into the Fox News territory of the $700 million plus that they had to pay or going to have to pay from the verdict this past year in terms of their lying about the election. Fox News implying for a very long time that in fact Joe Biden is not the president of the United States, it's Donald Trump. He won the election. And they defamed numerous people for having been participants in the so-called rigged election. $700-800 million. We're pushing toward $1 billion. That's Fox. And now Trump is close to $700 million after this next thing. And then that's not the end of it, as you know. There are going to be three other criminal trials, felonies. 91 felony counts that he still has to be tried for. And he may go to jail. He may have to pay fines. All of this obviously would cripple anyone. And it will perhaps end him financially. The judge also ruled last week that he's not allowed to be part of or run any business in the state of New York for the next 3 years. His sons for the next 2 years. And then even after that, he's going to have two monitors, court-appointed monitors, one of them a retired federal judge, who will essentially decide what the Trump Organization can do in terms of the money they spend. They're not allowed to go and get loans from banks that are registered in the state of New York. So there are other penalties involved in last week's ruling, but, you know, this should shut him down, at least corporately, financially. But before you get your hopes up, I've said this for a very long time, since before he was first elected. He's not as stupid as you think. You tend to think that, well, just look at me, such an idiot. He says these idiotic things. You know, he's crazy. And then your next thought is, how did 74 million people get bamboozled by him to vote for him? That's a lot of people. 74 million people either believe it's all a lie, that all these prosecutors and courts and everything, they're all lined up against him. Or some of them think, just like he said to Hillary, I'm just smart. I know how to rig things so I don't have to pay my taxes. I can commit sexual assault. I can do this and this and this and that. He has lived his life believing the law can't touch him. This goes way back to when he was in his 20s, working with his dad's real estate company and management company. They own numerous apartment buildings, mostly in Brooklyn and Queens. And they were discovered by the federal government to actually have a policy to not rent to black families. I can't remember the exact number, but it was, you know, basically they owned or ran thousands of apartments. And they had a system, if a black family applied for a rental, where on the application, it would essentially encode, there'd be a mark that meant they were black. And it was some crazy number. I can't remember it now, but the number of black families that actually got to rent apartments in Trump buildings that his dad had built or bought or put together or scammed the federal government into letting the Trumps run public, quote, public housing. It was just a few. It was just, I mean, literally just a few black families in those years got through. You know, either somebody forgot to mark the application, or, you know, they looked at the name there in the Trump office and they said, oh yeah, that's not a black family. Those are the Van Burens. Leslie Van Buren, his family, of course, not black, because, you know, I mean, I don't mean to make a joke about all this, but it was just like, how in New York City to get away for years with your thousands of apartments and not renting hardly any of them to anybody who's black? Well, the federal government, and this is way back, this case goes back to, geez, when was this? In the 70s, late 70s? The federal government just finally figured it out and said, well, this is illegal. You can't do that. You've done it. And they issued some sort of fine or some kind of penalty or whatever to the Trump family. But it never stopped them. Nothing has stopped them. Didn't stop his dad. Didn't stop Junior here. And Friday night, he comes outside the gates of Mar-a-Lago there. It's a great picture. I'll try to put this up on the site here. Standing outside these gates where literally behind the gate, it's like from inside Mar-a-Lago. It's all the lobby is just all blood red. I mean, it looks like the fires of hell, frankly, behind these iron gates. Just, you can take a look at it if you want. He's out there telling the American people, shouting from the steps of Mar-a-Lago, that this judge, these prosecutors, they're all lefties and commies and out to get him, et cetera, et cetera. People in the media, please start reporting the correct number. Without knowing the IRS number, it's already over $550 million. Then when the IRS reports this in the next few months, you've got to tack that on. And whatever happens to him in the hush money trial, tack that on. Always report the right number. of how much he owes due to his actions, his criminal actions, his civil actions. Stop saying it's $355 billion. It's almost double that. And the sort of genius, I guess, of Trump, sorry to have to use that word, but we, this past week, were witness to another mind-boggling thing in the courtroom in Atlanta, Georgia, where the prosecutor, Fani Willis, has put together a case where she's indicted Trump and other co-defendants who tried to steal the 2020 election. And of course, at the core of that charge is Trump himself, the tape of him on the phone with the Georgia Secretary of State saying to him, look, all you need to do is find me another 11,000, what was the number? 11,700 and some votes. Just one more than what we actually need to win Georgia. He's actually saying this as the President of the United States, as the Commander in Chief, telling this low-level Secretary of State guy in Florida, get me those 11,000 votes now. That's a crime. That's his voice. He's on tape. He said it. But this, Fani Willis has put together this amazing case with everything else they did, the intimidation, the way they defamed the black mother and daughter who were election workers, referring to them as passing drugs or being drug addicts or what they're at the polls. Oh, just this, I don't even want to repeat this stuff. It's so crazy. And she's taking him to trial. He and the defendants, four of whom have already pled guilty just to get out of it. But this past week, we were treated to a courtroom scene there in Georgia where one of the Trump's co-defendants had filed a complaint with the court that she be removed from being the prosecutor of this case because she had had an affair with a coworker. That's it. That was the charge, and that because she had had sex with this outside lawyer, prosecutor, whom she had brought into the case, therefore the whole case should be thrown out. Of course, the irony of that is that there, you've got Trump, who's already been found guilty of sexual assault himself, who proudly proclaimed how much he loved grabbing women by their genitals, and on and on and on of all the other Trump sexual whatever, that the Trump co-defendant is trying to stop this case because this adult woman in her 50s decided to have sex. And if you watched any of that, it was so painful. I was watching it for you, so you didn't have to. The whole thing centered around the hope that the American people, if watching this on TV, would somehow be appalled that this woman in her 50s had a sexual life. That was really at the core of this. That was somehow dirty, evil, disgusting, having consensual sex as a woman in your 50s. If you just step back from the TV set 5 feet and you watch this kind of, and essentially she's on the witness stand, it looks like she's on trial, and she knew it too, and she just said to the lawyer, one of the Trumpian lawyers, I'm not on trial. You're on trial. You're not prosecuting me. I'm prosecuting you because you, the people at your table there that you're defending, they tried to steal an election. It was, you know, Basil, Basil Hamden, who co-founded this podcast with me, said to me after that day, after that was over, he says, it's amazing, isn't it, that Trump was able to actually stage an actual courtroom hearing where the person who's prosecuting him is forced to take the witness stand and be grilled and, quote, prosecuted for having a consensual sexual relationship with a person she's working with. It's like, this is his life. This is how he's gotten away with it, because unlike a lot of our liberal representatives who never seem to have the courage to do anything, he just goes for it. And seriously, folks, have you ever seen the prosecutor who's prosecuting a case of somebody who's got 91 felony counts, indictments against him? He's able to put her on the stand, to put her under the microscope, to force her to answer private questions about her private life on national TV to try to defame her. Have you ever seen such a thing? Imagine every criminal who's in prison watching this, thinking, wow, you know, this is a great country. This is a great system. In America, if they come after you, if the top cop in the county, the prosecutor, comes after you, you go after them. You put them on the witness stand. You grill them for hours about their private lives and try and turn public opinion against them. That's how he's done it. That's how he's gotten away with it. He is ruthless, and he is an evil genius. And that's why many of you are afraid that he might get elected this November. He might get put back in the White House. Now, I don't think that. I don't think that. But but, right? Yeah, I know. I know. It was strange enough that it already happened. It feels, you're just sick of the whole thing by now, aren't you? You don't even want to hear his name. You don't want to see him. And yet he won't go away. Because he's tougher than most of us. He'll take and absorb every single punch. He'll absorb a $550 million, soon to be $650 million, $700 million fines. And get right back up and come at you again. Non-stop. And you try to make it go away by turning the TV off, by not reading anything more about him. You've already stopped talking to your relatives and friends who can't wait to vote for him again. Because he is the thing that won't go away. And he knows how to do it. All his screaming about the system being rigged against him, just like, you know this through your whole life, the people that often will accuse you of something, it's the very thing that they're doing. And the reason they're so fixated on it is because they know how to do it. So they think you must be doing it too. And that's Trump saying that this is all rigged against him because he's the chief rigger, the rigger in chief. And that's why he hasn't spent a single night in jail his whole life. And we're sitting here hoping that that's going to change. But it may not change because we have a president sitting in the Oval Office now, a person who, even though I didn't work for him, I was out there campaigning with Bernie, but I voted for him, and I encouraged you to vote for him because we had to get rid of Trump. And then he ended up in the White House, Joe Biden, and did one amazing thing after another. Got things passed that nobody thought he could get passed. Did things with executive orders, whether it was to help people with massive debt with student loans, to help the Dreamers, the kids that grew up here in this country that the Republicans want to throw out of the country. You know, we could go down, as I have told you, a whole list of things that Joe Biden has done that have been good for us, good for the country, good for the world. And then he decided to hug Benjamin Netanyahu, flew there to hug him and give him billions and billions and billions of dollars more. More than the usual billions that we give Israel each year. He decided to give the government of Netanyahu, himself under indictment, himself who was scheduled for trial this past fall until the Hamas massacre on October 7th of Israeli citizens. And that just went away because, well, there's a war now. As Netanyahu told all of us, this is a war that won't be over for a very long time. And there'll be no courtroom drama with him and his co-defendants. And Biden, understandably shaken, as I think everyone was, by what happened to the 1,200 people that died on October 7th. And wanting to be supportive, wanting to always stand up against anybody who would not just kill anybody, but specifically the responsibility that the world, especially the white world, especially the white Christian world, that organized a genocide of 6 million Jews. And another 4 million others, Catholics, communists, gays, gypsies. And so I think those of us who grew up in post-war America wanted to make sure we did everything possible so that that would never happen again. Holding that belief and that commitment to protecting our Jewish brothers and sisters. Quickly, after October 7th, evolved into a mass slaughter. A collective punishment of just if you were Palestinian and you lived in Gaza, you're going to die now. Or you're going to be removed from Gaza and pushed into the desert of Egypt or whatever else Netanyahu is planning. But the carpet bombing of a civilian population of people that had nothing to do with the murders on October 7th has been a horror show that we've all been forced to watch, and especially as Americans, to know that we have funded it. We fund it, we back it, and our president is over there hugging the person committing the slaughter. Because, you know, that's how you stop slaughter. You stop the slaughter. The 1,200 who died on October 7th shall be avenged by us killing 30,000 civilians, Palestinians, at least 10,000 of them children. At least. And Joe Biden is the bank. Joe Biden has made this happen. Joe Biden has funded it. It has been crushing to witness this. Don't you? I'm sure most of you feel the same way. I mean, one poll shows that 70% of Americans don't approve of what this has turned into. And even Biden has dropped hints that he doesn't like it either. Last week, he called Netanyahu over the top in his response in creating the slaughter of Palestinians. It hasn't made Israel safer. And the Israeli people know it. They can't. 82% in the polls in Israel have said they want Netanyahu removed. For, you know, a variety of reasons, but mainly because they don't feel safe. He didn't protect them. His decisions allowed the people that came to kill people on October 7th, allowed that to happen. And if you can't feel safe with a person that's in charge of your country, you've got to get rid of them. So that hopefully, I think, is coming, because the Israeli people want that to happen. And there's so many Israelis that are opposed to this. They've been vocal, the Jewish Voice for Peace there and here in this country. Huge demonstrations here in the U.S. Every weekend, they've not let up. They and the Palestinian Americans and just good Americans who oppose slaughter, and our tax dollars funding it. And the thing that Biden doesn't get, in addition to the fact that, you know, I wrote him a letter last week. I said, what is wrong with you? What is wrong with you? Have you stopped going to mass? I sort of bought the thing that, you know, you're one of the presidents always go to church, but it's always for show. It's they don't really believe in any of that stuff, you know. Carter believed it. And Biden, I thought, believed it. Believed in the teachings of the person that he's praying to. That you are not to be committing murder, mass murder. Wow. And there he is. And what he doesn't understand is, in addition to the immorality of his decision to back Netanyahu, he's lost millions of votes. Not because people are, you know, going to show up in November and vote for Trump. No, that's not going to happen. They're just not going to vote. Or they're going to vote for some third-party candidate. Yes, this may be, again, a very close election. I'm just wondering, just on a political level, just Biden the politician, why hasn't it dawned on him, or why doesn't he have any advisors telling him that each day you are losing thousands and thousands and thousands of votes because people are fed up with this, and now they can't even think about voting for you? I mean, they don't want Trump to win, so some of them will reluctantly show up and vote. But the youth vote, people between the ages of 18 and 35, they're sick about this. And now this has become one of the top reasons as to whether they're going to vote or not, or who they're going to vote for. Again, they're not going to vote for Trump. But if their vote has been what's called depressed, in other words, they may even show up to vote for Biden, But because it's a depressed vote, because they're sick of having to vote for him, they're not going to go out and actively get other people to vote for him. They're not going to bring five friends or relatives or whatever to the polls. They're not going to work the polls. They're not going to work the phones. They're not going to do all that extra work that you have to do. They're just going to show up themselves and vote. Those who are going to vote. But I'll tell you, in a state like Michigan, and it could come down to Michigan, where you've got the largest Arab and Muslim population in the country, probably per capita, you've got outside of the Arab world, more Arabs and Muslims who live in Michigan, especially southeastern Michigan from Flint down to Detroit. Many of them have lost family in this carpet bombing, in this slaughter. And last week, they formed a group, the Michigan primaries, February 27th, just a week or so away here. And they formed a group called Listen to Michigan. What they're encouraging voters to do, go and vote in the Democratic primary, but there's a line on the ballot called uncommitted. So, you know, Biden is on the ballot, and then Marianne Williamson is on the ballot, and is it Dean Reynolds, the congressman from Minnesota? You know, people who are not expected to get many votes, as they have not received many votes already in the few Democratic primaries that have already taken place. But this group, Listen to Michigan, is asking fellow Michiganders, show up to vote, but vote uncommitted, to send a message to Biden. So you're not putting Trump in the White House by doing this. It's the primary. They're not talking about the general election doing that yet. But let Biden know right now, he better listen to the vast majority of Americans who are opposed to sending any more bombs and tanks and whatever else to slaughter civilians, children, old people, people who don't own guns themselves, who are not conducting a war. Just kill them. If he doesn't listen to his own people, the American people do not support some kind of permanent war against the Palestinian people. What part of that, President Biden, don't you get? And why would you risk us having Trump back in the White House again? Because it was more important to hug and fund Benjamin Netanyahu and his gang of neo-fascists. Wow. What is going on here? So I think this is a great idea. I think to use the primary here on February 27th in Michigan to send a message to Biden, if even just 10% of the people mark uncommitted, it will be a blow. And maybe it'll be the bucket of cold water that needs to be dumped on the heads of the people running this Biden campaign. They've got to insist on, demand, and create a ceasefire. And let's work this thing out so that there's no more death, no more killing. I'll put a link to this organization, Listen to Michigan. It's really a plea, President Biden. Not just because it'll help you get reelected if you do the right thing, but it's also the right thing to do, and you know it. You were at a fundraiser in New York here a week or two ago, raising some bucks, a couple private parties you had, people's homes, and you were quoted by people there. How disgusted you were with what the Israeli government has ended up doing. You called it at one of these fundraisers an indiscriminate bombing campaign. Indiscriminate. You funded it. You are funding it. Israelis who want peace want you to stop funding it. Scores and scores of Jewish Americans want you to stop this. They know this is not making Israel more safe. It's making it worse. And it will continue to get worse. If you think the killing of children and old people and women and people that have nothing to do with October 7th, a mass punishment like this, we know what that's called. We've seen it in history. History that's not even 100 years old. That's why so many of our Jewish brothers and sisters are out there in the streets trying to stop this American-backed campaign of slaughter. Trump is the one who's going to benefit from this. And then we'll be doing a podcast a year from now about the genius, the evil genius of Donald J. Trump. How did he get Biden to get behind a genocide, a slaughter, a mass removal of people into the desert? How did that happen? That's what we'll be saying to ourselves. Why didn't we see it? Why didn't Biden see it? Where are his advisors? So yeah, it was a bad week for Trump. And he may have lost another battle or two. And yes, he could win the war. I don't think he has to, and I don't think he will, if Biden goes back to being who he said he was. If that's the case, the vast majority of Americans, twice, by 3 million votes in 2016 and by 7 million votes in 2020, twice have said they don't want him in the White House. That's our fellow Americans. That's the truth. Why play into his hands here? Why let this happen? I mean, it shouldn't be happening just for the moral reason that it is wrong to kill. It is wrong to kill. And it is wrong for you and I to be funding the killing. And I'm going to end there. Listen to Michigan, President Biden. We've been here before. We saw our state go for Trump because Hillary and her campaign refused to campaign in Michigan. They wouldn't go to Michigan and they wouldn't go to Wisconsin, and that cost them the election. Trump won in Michigan by an average of two votes per precinct. Two. That's it. Two. That's how it happened. Because the candidate herself wouldn't go there and do a single stitch of campaigning. I mean, it was so crazy. I've told you the story before, and they've admitted it to me, the campaign, on camera, that they wouldn't even allow yard signs to be sent to the state of Michigan so people could put up a Hillary sign in their yard. Because they were afraid, the answer that was given to me, that would just remind all the Trumpsters, all the haters,
that they had to get out and vote on election day. Every time they'd see a Hillary sign, they would just burn into their brains that, well, I must stop her. I must get people to come with me to the polls. And she and her campaign handed that to Trump. President Biden, why are you risking this? Stop it. Stop it right now. Call up Benjamin Netanyahu and say, the bank is closed for business. I'm going to leave it there, my friends. We'll talk more about this here in the coming weeks. It's great to be back talking to you again. Thanks for letting me, I'm working on my next project, so I took a few weeks to do that. So I'm sorry you haven't heard from me, but I'm back in the chair here in my podcast studio. And it's a privilege to be able to talk to you and to try to fix a few of these things to save our country, save the planet. There's more of us than there are of them. Never forget that. But I know that a number of us have had it. And some of you may not show up to vote. And that will put Trump in the White House. And I can tell you till I'm blue in the face, well, don't let that happen, folks. But then you're not living in Dearborn, Michigan, where you've already lost a family member or two or 20. If that happened to you, if your cousins were slaughtered and you as a taxpayer helped to fund that slaughter of your own family, you'd be a little discombobulated right now and you'd be thinking about just not showing up to vote. So let's show up on February 27th at the Michigan primary and vote uncommitted and let Joe Biden get the message. Listen to Michigan. If you don't listen to Michigan, just like the Hillary campaign didn't listen to Michigan, we're going to get Trump again. And I'm tired of having to issue these warnings as I have had to do for, it seems now, a number of times. I'm tired of it. And you shouldn't have to listen to me anyways. I have a high school education, folks. So you don't need me to tell you that they're not going to find weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. We have no business invading that country. That country had nothing to do with 9/11. And you don't need me to have to tell you that Trump's going to win. He's going to beat Hillary because Hillary has chosen not to go to Michigan and Wisconsin. You don't need me to do that. These are obvious things. They're obvious to most people with half a brain. And I shouldn't have to be stating the obvious here that you and I and Joe Biden should not be funding the slaughter of innocent civilians, children, women, old people, etc. End of story. Let's do what we need to do. Make your voices heard. Thanks for listening to me. Be well this week. We'll get through this. I am an optimist about that. I've seen us do it. So don't give up. This is not the moment to give up. Thanks, everybody. This is Rumble with Michael Moore. I'm Michael Moore. We'll talk to you soon. Take care.